Yo, yo, yiggy yiggy yo, what? Yiggy yiggy yo. This is Mattis Yahoo wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
okay.
No, actually, my name's Jonathan Metz,
no,
and we are here for Radio... and we're here for Radio Free Nintendo episode 125. I'm having to... it's hard for me to keep up with the numbers, because as we record this, we're still waiting for 123 to go online.
So, it's a well-oiled machine!
I don't think we have too many secrets in terms of the scheduling for this show. We're kind of recording an extra episode this week because I'm about to go out of town for a while, and these guys are going to have to march on without me. And I was like, you know, I just really, we talked about doing this year-end review episode, and I thought that was a great idea, and I just really wanted to be a part of it. I was like, you know, maybe we can cram in one extra episode before I have to leave, because I really want to make sure I'm on that. And so we're recording this on an unusual night of the week. And because of that, James couldn't be here, unfortunately. But we do have Greg and John Lindemann.
Yeah.
And special guest, Stephen Rodriguez.
I am special.
Director of our very website, Nintendo World Report.
Yes, it has been quite a bit of time, actually.
Since how
does this internet
podcast work? The scars have
healed,
and we're ready for a little more punishment.
Where's my pod so I can make this cast?
Good job. Yeah.
I'll let you guys do all the talking.
This is Steven. Try to give him a wide berth, and we will proceed on as if he were not here. I wanted Steven to be on the show because he's the director of the site. He has a nice kind of broad overview of what goes on in the world of Nintendo, what goes on our website as we try to cover the entire world of Nintendo and report on it. And it just seemed like a good fit to have him on this kind of
really
show.
Really, the thing is, he just has a hella smooth voice. Can I say that? There you go.
Mm. You do. Yeah.
Are you passing on the mantle of the sexies man? Because I'm not ready to give that up.
No, we got a little bit of a throwdown on our hands, gentlemen.
Fight you for a tooth and nail.
No, Mike Sklins gave me that title a very long time ago, and it's still mine.
All right.
For now.
So, before we start, I just want to pass on a few words of wisdom to our dear listeners. If you go to a Japanese restaurant and order the fried rice and end up with some leftovers and have to take it home, do not nuke that shit, because it will be nasty and you won't want to eat it. Here's what you do. If you have a rice cooker, and if you ever make rice, I recommend you get one, because it makes an enormous difference in the quality of the rice you can make as compared to boiling or something like that. All you have to do is put your fried rice in the rice cooker, sprinkle a little bit of water on it, you know, just a few teaspoons, and then cook it for just a couple minutes, you know, not the whole cycle, because it's already cooked. But you want to get that steam to warm it up and kind of get everything moist again, you know, stir it, you might want to pour in a little soy sauce. Comes out awesome, and that's what I'm finishing up right now. And
thank you, Anthony, for bringing this to our attention.
You're quite welcome. By the way, knowing is half the battle, and this message has been brought to you by Nintendo of America's personal trainer cooking.
G.I. Joe!
Oh, there you go. That's how it ties in. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But we all knew that beforehand because we're experts in cooking.
Yeah. I just bought that non-game for a couple friends of mine for Christmas.
Sure.
And, they will have already received it by the time they hear this. In fact, they'll probably be totally finished with it by the time they hear this. And so I don't mind saying that on the air. Anyway, this episode is all about the year in review, 2008, the year that was.
Mm.
And Mr. Greg Lay has once again done an utterly fantastic job guiding us through this mess of 2008. He has... provided us with some excellent show notes on how this all went down, and I thought it would be best to just kind of start a conversation and see where it leads us, and we'll use these notes to kind of back us up and give us some context as we talk about all the things that happened the past year, and I guess who wants to start?
I guess
what is the thing that you remember the most about this year that is almost
well,
over?
For it's... me, I think it's just the fact that, oh my god, the first half of this year was probably the most dismal in recent Nintendo history, you know, as far as...
The first half? What? Are you on crack?
Well, the middle part of it.
What do you smoke, sir, and where may I obtain
I don't know what's going on here.
The lead up to E3 and the aftermath of E3 in particular is what I'm really referring to.
Are you talking about news in terms of news or what you were actually playing?
Well, just in general what we were anticipating Nintendo would deliver versus what they... delivered, but that's more
the kind of Nintendo announcement side, like from the middle of the year. I mean, the start of the year for games was pretty great for Wii.
Until about April, May, it was really good.
It was kind of like, I guess, like it ended with when Okami came out in Europe, which was like June. Or you could go to, like, I guess for America, that would be, like, May with Boom Blocks was kind of, like, the end of the golden age of 2008.
Pretty much.
Like, forgive me if my memory's a little rusty. It's just that Nintendo sapped most of the life out of me with that couple of stretch of months, and it just...
Yeah, I mean, I would say up to that point, that where the sort of Okami Boom Blocks kind of time in the sort of early part of the summer or whatever, it was pretty good. I mean, even Nintendo and third parties, obviously, like Brawl, which we were waiting for forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was delivered for me. That was huge. You had Mario Kart, which is, yeah, you know, I liked it a lot. I got some fun out of that. Yeah, I think in America you had Endless Ocean, which was pretty good. That came out in 2007.
Oh, that's right. Brawl came out in March, didn't it?
Yeah, you got it a bit earlier because you had the Japanese version, didn't you, Wendy?
Yes, that's right. That's why I couldn't remember, because I was, you know, enjoying it.
You had it in what, January? When did it come out in Japan?
It was earlier. End of December.
It was supposed to come out at the end.
End of December.
No. It was supposed to come out at the end of January, and then it was delayed for like a week, and it snuck into February.
Oh, yes, that's right. It was actually, I think it was, end of January, beginning of February.
I know it was significantly earlier than North America and drastically earlier than Europe, but certainly it didn't come out in 2007.
Hunger Strike aside.
God, that was the story of 2008 for me, except I was playing the game the whole time.
We had a lot of amazing stuff early in the year. You know, you had No More Heroes, I think, was a really interesting release. Gave us a lot to talk about. You know, I mean, it's a pretty interesting game, and I think it's actually a really good game. Mm-hmm. And that game, I didn't play through it very quickly, so it actually kind of spanned quite a stretch for me, like 3 or 4 weeks it took me, much longer than I usually take when I'm reviewing a game. But I just sort of didn't want to... And I think it's the kind of game that, because it has this very transparent structure to it, you know, like you pretty much know at the beginning how long the game is. I kind of didn't want to rush through it.
Sure.
You know, like I kind of wanted to savor it and make it last. And so I took it slowly. I played like one or two missions a week. That's a really cool game. It's very Wii. You know, it's all about the Wii. I mean, it's definitely not a game that would work very well on other systems. So I think that was a great release. And yeah, I do agree that, especially in America, I think Boom Blocks was sort of the end of the golden age, or the golden months. After that, I mean, we had a shit-tay summer, and that's not unusual, but what was strange about 2008 is that the shit-tay summer kind of stretched into the shitty fall.
Well, too. I guess it's means of contrast. As a means of contrast, if you extend it back from that point where Boom Blocks hits, sort of brings it to an end, to going 6 months into 2007, you think about some of the things that either you had, like what Nintendo delivered themselves in that time. We had Mario Strikers, Battalion Wars, Fire Emblem, Galaxy, Metroid Prime 3, and then, you know, all the stuff right through up to, you know, Brawl, Mario Kart, Wii Fit, Endless Ocean, all that stuff. That was a pretty good year, 12 months, you know, obviously not in a calendar, but, and then it stops.
And then it seems like they took the next year off.
Yep.
And just really bad software planning. Mm-hmm. I think not in the Japanese development title sense of software planning, but like actual schedule planning.
Well,
you know, it was just kind of really bad.
The reason
on
for
Nintendo's
that, looking back on, I'm thinking that, you know, obviously Nintendo front loaded the Wii release, like with all the great games right up front. Eventually, you know, it was going to come back to haunt them, and for that, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months right there in the middle, it just completely dried up, and we were kind of left out in the cold with nothing.
Yeah.
Well, and from Nintendo's perspective, it was, the whole year was amazing because they never stopped selling System of Horror games, and all these games that they released, other than Smash Brothers, which pretty much just sold in one giant ejaculation back in March, and hasn't really done much since then in terms of sales.
It's very true.
Everything else has been truly evergreen. I mean, it's just amazing. Wii Fit was the number two game last month, and that's over 6 months after it originally came out. So their games have just sold miraculously well, and so I can understand from Nintendo's perspective, they're like, "Yeah, what's the problem?"
Well, I suppose
we're very happy.
If you look at it from a gamer's perspective,
it's been kind of slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from a commercial perspective, you could argue that they kind of gambled that, you know, everything was going to, you know, Wii Fit and Mario Kart and stuff was going to sort of carry the momentum through, and that paid off big time. So from their point of view, you know, as Windy said, there was a kind of natural gap. Maybe they could have done better at filling it a little bit, but you know that it happened, and but for them it hasn't really exposed them particularly badly because things have just gone so. I mean, Mario Kart staying power, as you said, it's very different from Brawl, because Brawl, you know, sold this huge vault. I think it was well over, was it 2.7 million in March or something? Certainly
something
in excess.
Ridiculous.
It was something in excess.
And that was just in America.
Yeah, you know, that was something
that was
in excess.
Just that one region. It sold extremely well all around the
it
world.
It has, yeah, it has. But Mario Kart, you know, has been really, really strong everywhere as well. And it certainly outsold it in Japan at this point, and in Europe, and it may well, by the time the holiday season over, actually overtaken Brawl, which would be quite an achievement because as of November, Brawl was the biggest selling game of the year. So
more than GTA 4?
But single SKU. If you put GTAs together, then it would be more than Brawl.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's a 3.5 mil Mario Kart, that was in November. Mario Kart Wii, you could easily surpass that. So, yeah, I mean, they've managed to just ride those two that came out within a couple of weeks of each other, remember? But it didn't.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think Wii Fit will end up being the overall winner of 2008. I think it will be the high-selling game, regardless of the number of SKUs. And
the revenue,
that
of course.
Because it's absolutely incredible considering how expensive it is.
Yeah.
It's $90 in Americans, and it's even worse in Europe.
Well,
I mean,
the currency
it's brutally expensive.
Kind of change things, but yeah.
I understand, but I mean, it's just everything.
No, it was. It was
Europe,
at launch.
You know,
it was at launch of a very big disparity, but they are earning an obscene amount of money from that. And it's been out, I think, for pretty much the entire year in Japan. And it sold some, getting up towards like 3 million units or something ridiculous. Certainly in excess of two. So I mean, Wii Fit was, everybody predicted that it would be huge, but I think it's been a little huger than you might have thought. It really,
Just I mean, my one Wii Fit story. It was interesting. My girlfriend, now fiance, is. We were looking at apartments. We were looking to buy a house or a townhouse. So we went to, we were looking at a couple of apartments here, like loft apartments. And so we walk in, and it was one of those things where you walk in, and the person was still there. Like it was like an open house, but the person was still there. So it was this single girl who probably wasn't really a big game player, I'm assuming.
Was she hot?
I don't know. Not really. I don't
He's
remember.
He's pretty much contractually obliged to say that at this point.
No. I guess so. You're right. But I'll give you if you ask me, I'll give you the truthful answer. That's just how I am. But so we walk in there, and I thought it was the weirdest thing because what does she have underneath her TV is a Wii and Wii Fit. And it just kind of blew me away because, I mean, I don't even know this person, but this was just like, probably just like your normal single girl. It wasn't like she lived there with her boyfriend or something like that, right? Like, and she has a Wii and Wii Fit. And I was like, wow, this thing really has penetrated everyone. I mean, people that really don't even but in terms of market penetration, there's people buying Wii Fit that probably really haven't bought video games for years.
And that's the thing, I think, as well, that obviously we've talked about the revenue, but the thing about Wii Fit is, as sort of inclusive and wonderful as Wii Sports is, I think Wii Fit has probably reached further and wider even than that did. And so it has been a system seller as well, probably.
Sure. Well, the thing is, Wii Fit doesn't even attempt to be a game. It doesn't even pretend to be a game. Wii Sports is very clear. I mean, it's a series of mini games, basically, but
I mean,
it's very clearly a video game.
Yeah.
it is a pastime. It is a waste of time in many people's eyes. Whereas, whereas We Fit, it has a constructive purpose,
almost,
and so
yeah,
you're going to
like
reach
productivity software.
And even a different audience than Wii Sports, because now you're getting people who literally have no interest in playing games. I mean, Malcolm X didn't read fiction. He thought it was a waste of time. Now, that's mind-blowing to me, because I have a hard time reading nonfiction. But there are people who just can't justify playing a game. Mm-hmm. They just, to them, they have more important things to do.
Yep.
But Wii Fit has a chance with these people, because it is an activity.
It's constructive.
You know, it is something useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, although it was received relatively quite well by the gaming press most of the time. Windy, you played a lot of it. How did you find it?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I started out, and actually, kind of the big deal is when we got the review copy in, I was going to have my mom kind of do it until she kind of blew out her knee, so that went that idea. But she just totally fell in love with it almost right from the start, and even I was starting to use it and starting to kind of really dig it. But the thing about it, though, after about, 2.5 months, I started kind of skipping out on it a little bit, especially after my mom kind of wasn't able to use it anymore. And I really haven't used it as much as I would like to have been using it. You know, it's an activity, yes, but it's just like any other fitness activity. You need to stick with it, really, to get the most out of it.
Now, does it get repetitive after a while? I mean, the actual tasks that you're doing in it? So does it get kind of old?
I think there's enough variety, unless you do the exact same exercises
every day. I mean, there's
enough stuff that you can kind of just create a, you know, you can just basically do whatever you feel like on a whim, and end up having quite a bit of variety.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the problem with Wii Fit is it's not particularly well suited for creating like a workout plan.
It's not
easy to be consistent with it, because you can't create, for instance, a playlist of activities. I mean, it remembers the ones you've played the most, but you can't create a workout for yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, one of the problems I had.
So there are a lot of problems with how it's put together, and I have Wii Fit now, and I do enjoy it, and I think the reason that the game critics, even in the gaming press, received it so well is that despite its obvious flaws and some pretty clear omissions, especially from the Western exercise front, but even just in terms of, you know, being a useful tool, it's not the most useful tool for improving your body, but it does something that's so different from everything else. Mm-hmm. So there's just nothing like it, nothing decent like it, and it is quite well made. Mm-hmm. I mean, outside of some of these meta things like, you know, I can't use it in exactly the way I would like to, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it does what it does extremely well, and it is fun to play, and that goes a long way, a really long way. I mean, any game that can make me run is doing something right, because I fucking hate running.
Yep.
Well, okay. Well, yes, and that's kind of exactly the reason why I kind of started, or rather stopped playing it. But again, kind of the reason why I want to get back to it eventually is because the thing is, though, at the end of the day, it's still a workout and it's still exercise. So if you're not committed to actually still sticking with it, yes, it's fun and enjoyable when you are doing it, but the fact is you still need to do it. So I'd rather just sit on my couch and veg out and play, you know, Mario Galaxy or Smash Brothers or whatnot, instead of actually have to, you know, get on my workout clothes or clear my space, you know, set up weeds with the board and everything, and then run around for 10 or 15 minutes and do these painful stretching exercises. And, oh, but at least my me is smiling. Yay! Fit credits, yay! Yeah, it's good. Yeah, exactly right. It's good for what it is, but you need to, like anything else, stick with it to get the most results out of it. And apparently, I guess a lot of people are seeing it as, you know, hey, it's an excuse to work out, but it's fun, and that's great, but it's still working out, and working out in and of itself is only fun if you have that attitude going into it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about a lot about Wii Fit, which is appropriate, I think, if we're doing a year in review, because it was probably the most important game released this year on any platform.
Yeah, and also it's just,
I mean,
something
in terms
something
of what
new.
It did on the market and what it does for gaming and period.
Mm-hmm. And it gave us the balance board, of course, which going forward could be
quite quickly has been adopted by third-party publishers and, well, not so much Nintendo themselves in terms of their other games. I'm sure we'll see something next year, but third parties have jumped on the the balance board very, very
well,
quickly.
It's sort of, I mean, well, some success. Like, was it like over, you're talking over 10 million units sold by the end of the year? I mean, it's its own platform. I mean, you can make
that
games.
Should get somebody's attention.
You can
right?
make games for that. I mean, easily. And I think some of the positive reception for Wii Fit was related because was related to the balance board, that it worked. You know, that it had that all the right kind of nuance, and you had these little mini games in it. Which, you know, not that consequential, ultimately not really the point of it, but it was almost like a little, like, tech demo for what the balance board could do. And it does look, and then you've got stuff like Wii Ski and the Shaun White snowboarding and all that, and that seems kind of exciting for the future, actually.
Yeah.
I actually, just yesterday, I opened up the snowboarding mini game in Wii Fit, and honestly, I didn't even know there was one. I had the first two ski games. Yeah. And I didn't think there was snowboarding in Wii Fit, and I unlocked it, and my friends were playing it, and I'm like, you know, obviously this could be done much better. And and the nice thing is, like any good tech demonstration, which is basically what it is, you know, you look forward to a full retail product that really takes this idea and goes balls out with it and does it right, and that's already happened. In fact, the game that did that was released before I even unlocked the tech demo in Wii Fit. Yeah. So that's how quickly it happened, and I'm really glad to see that, because I think it's a really cool way to control games that we've never seen before.
Well, Electronic Arts is also bringing out...
it's being used to create kinds of games that we could never really do well before.
Well, Electronic Arts is also bringing out... what is it, EA Sports Active? Is that what it is?
Yeah, they're going directly for the actual, you know, the exercise part again, and they're saying it's going to be more sort of Western centric exercise rather than sort of you know, Japanese kind of look at it, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you at this point? I mean, like I said, they probably are Wii owners that bought the Wii with Wii Fit. That's kind of how they see the Wii in their mind, so give them more stuff to buy, you know, make them sort of reinforce their previous purchases with another one.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, and as long as it's well-made, then I'm totally for that, and I will certainly consider purchasing that for myself, just because, you know, I bought Wii Fit. Obviously, I'm interested in doing that kind of thing with my Wii, so if this other thing works well and, you know, and is pretty fun to do, then I'll probably get that.
Well, I always find that the way Nintendo does stuff is very interesting, because it's almost like Wii Fit was sort of a seed title, like, hey, everybody, here's this, you know, we've made this, you know, this kind of hardware and stuff, and this is what you can do with it. Just to kind of like throw it out there. Maybe it's not fully fleshed out, but it gets thrown out there, and now you see companies like Electronic Arts. Wouldn't surprise me if Ubisoft made something like that.
Yeah, well, they've already produced... Sure. You know, they've been quick with supporting the balance board itself, so it would make sense.
Well, yes.
Yeah, and that's what all the Wii games have, you know, the Wii-branded games have been, John. I mean, they're all kind of these test products, except... the one we haven't talked about yet, Wii Music.
Yeah.
It does feel like it's kind of behind the ball. I mean, it feels like if this had been released at launch, it would have made a lot more sense, and it probably would be given a lot more slack by the gaming press. And now that, you know, in the age of very competitive race between Rock Band and Guitar Hero, it doesn't make much sense. And what we've seen so far is that it hasn't really sold very well. I mean, I think average people are looking at this on TV and saying, you know, that doesn't really look like something I want to do on the Wii. Or they're looking at it and thinking, why would you do that when you could play Guitar Hero? Mm-hmm. Because again, these music games that we're now very, very familiar with all their crazy hardware peripherals, one of the amazing things about them is, though, although it's very easy to treat them like super hardcore games that, you know, like the typical inaccessible stuff that we like to talk about all the time, these are in fact innately accessible games because everyone knows what a guitar does and roughly how to play it.
Well, they're also
and
just so
everybody wants to play the drums, and so, you know, my parents already would want to play Rock Band. They don't need something as simplified as Wii Music. And so it's like, where is the market for this exactly? Like 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds? It just doesn't seem to make quite as much sense.
Well, I don't think it was as innovative as people expected. I mean, when you see something like that coming from Nintendo, and I think, I mean, I know that there was a certain segment out there that said, oh, well, you know, people just don't like the Wii and the kind of games that are on it, so they really just don't get it. But I think that the problem was that the press was really expecting something that was really, really innovative, and they didn't really get it, so that's why it was critically panned in some quarters.
You're hearing a lot of people say it's the worst game Nintendo's made in 10 years. Mm-hmm. You're hearing people say Miyamoto jumped the shark. He didn't have that much to do. He didn't have that much to do with Wii music.
No, as we sort of, we have mentioned in a previous episode, had this very curious development history where the composer Totake or whatever, what's his name, he did music for Animal Crossing and things. He was the director of the game. So, and then
I think ultimately that was probably a very poor management decision. It was probably Miyamoto's decision to put him in charge of it.
Yes, it was
actually
his decision, because there was an article on Wired about it, and it was his decision, and he actually, conceded that it didn't go the way he foresaw it going.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, the problem there is not that the guy is totally incapable of making a game, because maybe he is, but considering someone who is that inexperienced is put in charge of a fairly important game for Nintendo's portfolio, you can't have a game like that taking over 2 years to get to market, because by the time it actually came out, it no longer made sense. Mm-hmm. We'd seen too much other, similar material from other companies that actually does it better. And so
It did try and fill a slightly different need.
I
don't know. It's more about I don't know specifically because I haven't played it, so it's a bit rich. But, from what I've read of the people that have played it and some of the people that are a bit more favourable about it, it's more about, obviously it's not about, if the Guitar Heroes are a very traditional gamey in the, as you said, they're innately appealing is the main thing, isn't it? They're accessible because they're so appealing. It's music people know, it's, an instrument people know, it's that widespread recognition that has a hook. But as a game, they are kind of, or certainly can be, if you turn the settings up or whatever, be sort of pretty hardcore,
but they don't need to.
They don't need to be.
What I was talking about last week. You have so many good games can be played in a casual way or a hardcore
and
way.
And
the great thing about something like Rock Band is you can play it both ways at the same time with
appealing that people are quite happy to just even if they felt they were just scratching the surface of it, they would still have fun. Because the idea is so appealing. But obviously with Wii Music, it was supposed to be more about creativity, I guess, rather than just executing a sort of routine.
But that's the thing, you are actually executing a routine. I mean, that's kind of the nature of the MIDI music and the way it works, is that you can't really be creative. You can just sort of play on the beats that they allow you to play
on. It was this whole thing of, the arrangements, you got all these different MIDI, quote-unquote, instruments, and then it's like, you play this track in there, and then you lay another track on top of that, and you can send it to your friends, and they lay some different tracks. And so you are still going along with sort of the predetermined song, but it's like how you do it is kind of being changed and stuff, but that's what they were going for. I just don't know whether they pulled it off. They were trying to occupy a different space. But I think it's what it ended up with is a bit awkward. And just, it doesn't have the same appeal as Guitar, because it's just not as obvious what it is. I mean, it was like, Chris Collis kind of summed it up in the headline to one of his articles where he called it inscrutable. Because it is kind of, it's a little opaque. What it actually is all about, I think, to some people.
And also, it's kind of everything but the kitchen sink approach, too. I mean, you've got this, drum simulator in it. You've got several different modes that don't have anything to do with each other. Almost like a Mario Paint kind of vibe. And it's, as a suite of applications, none of them is all that great.
Yeah.
And you can maybe argue that all put together, it's a decent package. I mean, the main defense of it, I've heard the only one that makes any sense to me is what Nick and Chessa said about it, which is that it's fun to play in a group.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Sure.
It's a party game.
Sort of a lot.
But the thing is, if you had Wii Music and Rock Band in your house, and you had four people over and everybody wanted to play a music game, are you really going to choose Wii Music over Rock Band? Regardless of the makeup of that group,
yep.
I just find it very difficult to justify choosing Wii Music over the competition.
I mean, part of that is,
it's cheaper, it's much less expensive, but beyond that, it just doesn't offer nearly the same kind of appeal.
Well, look at the kind of songs that are in it. I mean, what has a broader appeal? I mean, I could bring anybody in off the street, and they can find something in Rock Band where they're going to be like, wow, I think it would be cool to play that song because I like that artist, because I just heard it on the radio.
Yeah, those games, the breadth of material that those games have now is so so wide that, it's not going to be like too, there's going to be something for a lot of people on them.
These are songs songs that people actually want to play. Yeah. I mean, just because every person in America knows Yankee Doodle Dandy, it doesn't mean they want to play that in a video game. You know, that's the problem with this public domain bullshit in Wii Music, and Nintendo is so in love with the public domain music because it's free, right? It reduces their development costs. And they think, well, it's just like in Donkey Konga, you know, you put in these games, you put these really old songs in the games, and they think, well, here's a song that everyone knows. And yeah, that's true. A five-year-old knows the tune to this melody, but that doesn't mean they want to play it. They're probably sick of hearing it at school.
Well, but the difference with Donkey Konga, that's my feeling. The difference with Donkey Konga, of course, is that you have the fucking cool conga drums, dude. I mean, that's what made the game so awesome. You have the conga drums, and it's the same deal with Rock Band and Guitar Hero. You actually have the drum kit. You actually have the guitar.
Yeah.
In Wii Music,
I think waving the remote in the air is not as much fun as actually hitting an actual.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, the whole pantomime element, I don't know how appealing that is either. You know, because with Wii Sports,
it lacks that tactile connection.
With Wii Sports, you know, that is some of the. I think that is some of the appeal to a lot of people. How it widens out is the thought that it, you know, you are waving the controller in the hand. But the funny thing is, when you take that into the musical context, it doesn't work the same way. Especially when you've got this far more sort of vivid kind of pantomime of actually having a guitar controller or something like that.
Yeah, a game like Wii Music, what I like to call it, I kind of coined this term when I reviewed Boogie last year, it's what I call having fun on the honor system. If you play the game the way the developer thinks you should play it, yeah, it's fun.
Oh, you're a genius.
But it's not the way to actually have fun with the game. It's like, okay, if you do this and you do this and you do this and you do it in this way through these restrictions, it's fun. But no one's going to want to jump through those hoops to do it. They just want to have the fun the way they want to have the fun. And Wii Music and Boogie and most games of that sort, you know, it's too much of a non-game. It's a non-non-game. Non-non-non-game.
Well, okay.
Something like that.
I'm gonna claim the last word on Wii Music, because I think we should move on to something
else. It sucks. Last word.
And I just want to say that my issue with Wii Music is that it's too reductive. It has the wrong idea about controlling a game with the Wii controller, because obviously pantomiming is innately part of playing the Wii. I mean, that's why so many people like it. But there's a huge difference between imitating a tennis racket or a baseball bat with the Wii remote and imitating a violin with the Wii remote. Because when you wave the remote through the air, that's not really that much different than what you would do with a baseball bat or a tennis racket or a bowling ball. You just hold it and move it through the air, right? There's nothing more complicated than that. With a violin, you're making this motion, and you know in the back of your mind that playing a violin is dramatically more complicated than this. And you're not actually doing any of the stuff that a violin player actually does. All you're doing is waving your hands back and forth. And if you took an actual violin and did what you do in Wii Music to play the violin, you would commit suicide after 5 minutes because, you know, the sound would be so terrible. Whereas if you took a baseball bat and imitated what you did in Wii Sports Baseball, you might actually hit a ball eventually.
Yeah, it's a bigger
so
distance.
So I think it's so reductive that it's actually insulting to people's intelligence. And there's a psychological barrier that most people can't get beyond. They can't fool themselves into thinking that they're actually playing these instruments, because playing the instrument is so much more complex than the motion they're making with the controller, and that is what sets Wii Music apart from Wii Sports, and it's what makes it so much less successful in what it does.
Yeah,
that's my.
Yeah, no, I think it's very solid too. That distance is just a bit too much of a bridge to gap, gap to bridge rather, and you know then the problem becomes that people just don't get involved so much, and then maybe it's not. But I mean but sales wise, you have to say it's just the fact that Nintendo have struggled to sell it. I mean, I know you personally, Johnny, predicted it, that they would struggle to market it, and they have. So I think
I think they're struggling to market it because it's not a good game.
Yeah, I mean that's true.
It's not that they don't know how to market games, because obviously
sometimes.
But everything else they've marketed has been
sometimes
worthy,
you can market
and this one
game
is not.
You know,
definitely.
You know what I mean.
Yeah,
however bad it is.
Well, they should.
If there's a hook to play on, then you can sell it.
Here's the trick, man. They should have packed in a remote and priced it at $50, and they'd sell billions of them.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's just, you know, it's clearly shitware, in my opinion, the same way Wii Play is, but it doesn't have that draw of, well, at least it's a good value, You know, it comes with a controller. It's only $10. Yep. No, Wii Music is $50, yeah. And people aren't going to bite for that because it looks like shit. Sorry, that's what
I think. That's the final word.
That's it.
Hey, let's talk about Nintendo DS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was, for most people, I think, a pretty awesome year for Nintendo
Especially
DS.
Especially RPG fans.
Man, dude, ridiculous.
Not even RPG fans.
I'm in heaven this year with DS. Like, I just got Chrono Trigger for review today. I haven't even cracked it because I'm still playing Dragon Quest IV. And I haven't quite even finished Final Fantasy IV. I got to the very last dungeon and didn't quite complete it, but my friend Kevin is now borrowing it and playing through it, and he's loving it. So, yeah, I mean, they're all remakes, but they're remakes of my three of my favorite games of all time, so I'm not going to complain. Yeah, I mean, sure. And plus I got all three for free to review, so I'm definitely not going to complain. I think Square had a really landmark year on DS, and they weren't all remakes. They released a lot of original games this year and a lot of sequels. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they released more games this year than Nintendo did, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, they may well have done. I mean, that's the thing. This Nintendo kind of took it slow this year. You know, you have to really think of...
Boy, did they.
What do you think?
They pretty much did.
Relatively slow.
I mean, when you think of...
I mean, they could on the DS. Because
yeah.
I mean, their
focus was on the Wii, especially early in the year and so forth. Mm-hmm. And when you think of like from when the DS started to really take flight from 2005, sort of middle of 2005, and then through 2006, 2007, it was a bit of a lull for first party output because we didn't have some of the really big titles like some like obviously Phantom Hourglass was kind of one of the last really huge like you know, Nintendo properties mm-hmm. to arrive on the system. I mean, we had some good games. I mean, I've been playing Advance Wars: Days of Ruin, which came out right at the start of the year, a little lately, and it's good. I mean, it's Advance Wars, but it's been like 3 years since I played Dual Strike, so I was ready to play it again. And you know, it's still addictive, and it's kind of streamlined and stuff, and it's got online and so that's a game that I think a lot of you know more traditionally focused gamers would have enjoyed from Nintendo. Certainly,
I think that was the last Nintendo first party DS game with voice chat. Am I wrong?
I don't know that it's got voice chat, actually. It might do, but I don't know.
Days of Ruin has voice chat.
Right. It does. That's good.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
But I think that's the last game that Nintendo themselves released with voice chat. And that was with January when it came out.
Yeah, it was really early. It was right at the beginning.
Yeah. But, yeah, that game I feel like was probably overlooked a little bit because of, you know, when it came out, it wasn't marketed very heavily at all.
No.
It didn't seem to really have that much word of mouth. It seemed like it just kind of came and
no,
went.
No, it got very good reviews,
none of my
but, you know, like yeah. you said, it
yeah,
was kind
of... Yeah, but none of my friends were talking
exactly,
about
it's
it,
kind
you know.
Of
I didn't know anybody who was playing it at the time. And it's a game that I was interested in, but I had some other stuff I was playing, and I never got around to getting into it. You know, I never did buy it, even though I kind of like Advance Wars. So,
but
I don't know, I felt kind of bad for that game, because I felt like it probably didn't get the chance that it deserved,
because
well, yeah.
by all accounts, it's really
but that's
good.
That's okay, I mean, that's the thing about Advance Wars, or most DS games, you can always come back to them, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years
yeah,
later.
Well, that's what I did.
It'll be great. Sure. And, I mean, Advance Wars, in general, you could buy them, even, well, like, well, maybe not the first Advance Wars on the Game Boy, but any one of them will last you forever. So, just blows my mind that anybody would buy like 2 or 3 of them.
And that's the other thing is I wonder if people are all that eager to buy a new one because the games have such longevity. I mean, because you can play Days of, you know, whatever, Dual Strike, there are probably people who still play Dual Strike. And so maybe they felt like, I don't really need Days of Ruin.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's they did give you the online stuff, so, you know, maybe you know, you could actually sort of get more out of it that way. Because it did seem like it was kind of a more... So, you know, they definitely didn't try and broaden Advance Wars out or anything with this one. It was very much like stuff that fans might want, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole sort of more streamlined combat wasn't really simplifying it. It was just... although it did simplify it, but I don't think that was its express purpose. It was just kind of... It did get a bit bloated with the whole... double CO powers and stuff in Dual Strike. I think that was just a kind of rationalization, but that was the kind of game that, you know, sort of traditional core DS people would like from Nintendo, but there was a lot of other games like that from third parties this year, a lot of them that were really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked last week about Space Invaders Extreme in this context. I think pretty much everybody that's got that on staff loves that game.
It's an amazing game.
I love that game.
Bango Spirits.
Yes. Not as universally appealing as Space Invaders, probably, but it's very good in its own right. Yeah, and it's just, I mean, that game, again, it's kind of, you know, it's a sort of wonderful irony to, you know, the DS, the you know, people call it, you know, the famous, you know, Brain Age, Nintendogs, all that stuff that's still selling. But, you know, something, it's so big at this point that it can support something as ridiculously niche as Bangaio Spirits.
Exactly. You know, and I think also the fact that the DS has so many people that are used to, dare I use the word hardcore? I hate to use that word, but it's just—it's almost like the DS audience is primed and ready to try to give something like Bango Spirits a chance.
Well, it's just so big for a start. So many people have them. Obviously, you've got a lot of people to work with, and then you know there are a lot of very quality traditional game experiences that have built up over the last several years. So you know people have got into those kinds of games on the system. Obviously, I mean the RPGs at this point, you know, traditional RPGs. I mean that's, you know, it's the system for them. Thanks to Square Enix, it's got a policy.
Okay, let me throw this question out. Do you think that the DS is the best RPG system of all time at this point? Maybe.
I would say yes, just because it has almost all of the best Super Nintendo RPGs that previously made Super Nintendo the best RPG system of all time. So it's pretty much co-opted the Super Nintendo library of RPGs, or it's on the way to doing so. Yeah. And it has a bunch of its own that are you know, range from very bad to very good. Yeah. Really all across the spectrum, but there are quite a number of very good DS-specific RPGs. Mm-hmm. Most of the ones I've been playing tend to be remakes.
Yeah.
But in the case of something like Final Fantasy IV and Dragon Quest IV, they're pretty significant remakes. I mean, they're really dramatically redone, especially Final Fantasy is just a completely different game than the original version. So, you certainly can't fault Square Enix for not putting enough effort into it.
Yeah, I mean, the production
values. You might be able to say that
well.
For Chrono Trigger.
I mean, the production values on like, you know, they were not exactly doing it on the cheap, are they, with these remakes? You know, they're really good.
I think, honestly, Final Fantasy IV, I think, is one of the best games on the DS. And that's not just because I thought it was one of the best games ever made. I think in terms of the way it was made, the amount of money they put into it, the value that you get out of it, the quality of the experience, I think it stands up with any DS game that came out this year, remake or otherwise. So I think they've done a tremendous job with it. Dragon Quest IV actually has been remade in a very different way, but almost equally as impressive. It doesn't quite have the production values. You don't have a lot of voice acting. The graphics aren't nearly as impressive, but it never has been. That's not what that series is about. You know, that it's not a particularly cinematic series. It's not a series known for great graphics. It's more colorful art. So, and I think it's, in terms of like the amount of gameplay you get out of it, how long it is, how much variety there is, it's just as good. I'm still playing it. You know, I've had it for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah,
so I'm still playing it.
Speaking of RPGs on the DS, you know, and this is kind of looking forward more than looking back, but it's scary that DS isn't done. I mean, Dragon Quest IX.
Oh, nowhere near. That's the big one. Yeah. I mean, that's the one that's a bit...
I fully believe that when eventually Dragon Quest IX is released in Japan, a black hole will open up and envelop it.
It will actually start an RPG on its own. Somewhere there, a hero will rise to try to close this black hole.
I think in the ultimate sort of Square Enix mashup from the sort of two sides, that Dragon Quest IX will actually be Larvos.
Box will come out, and you have to vanquish it.
So, okay, I have a hypothetical question for you guys. Do you think Square Enix is starting to regret developing Final Fantasy XIII on PS3 instead of DS?
I'll say definite no. They have very lofty artistic goals, don't they? That they want to achieve, as well as the commercial grabbery. You know, and
I know the two series are very different, very divergent, especially as you get later to the later entries. But I don't know, in terms of the user base, I think at the time they started FF13, like 3 years ago, they didn't know that the DS was going to be you know, probably the best-selling platform
of all
time. Well,
and they didn't know that the
PS3 the PS3 was going to be such a non-starter.
Yeah, they probably didn't envision making it for 360 at that time either, did they?
That's true.
Is what I kind of always find interesting about the Wii and the DS. It's like, especially with the Wii, it's like I feel like third parties, they almost have to make kind of like a business choice versus, especially with someone like Square Enix, it's like they have to make a choice. Okay, you know, I feel like with like they've kind of painted themselves into a corner in that, you know, like every single Final Fantasy game has to be bigger, better, more artistically impressive. Mm-hmm. And to do that, mm-hmm. they always have to be on the best hardware. And I feel like with Wii, it's kind of like somebody like Square Enix, they kind of had to make a choice. It's like, okay, do we want to follow the same path and make it, put it on the best hardware, make it bigger, better, more impressive, or do we probably do what is the smartest, you know, business choice and go with the Wii and kind of, I don't know, probably sacrifice maybe the artistic vision of the game or something like that.
Well, there's actually something like a nice benefit to that. Now that it's Square Enix that they merged, you know, they've done that on the one hand, Dragon Quest IX. On the other hand, Final Fantasy XIII, so it's kind of the best of both.
Yeah,
worlds.
They're kind of, mm-hmm. you could look at them as hedging in a sense, aren't they? They're kind of doing both.
Yeah, because they made the decision one way on the consoles and the other way on the handhelds. I mean, they have supported the PSP, but not nearly to the extent
that they've
supported
the DS,
and I think it's been a good business decision to throw their money on the DS.
But I think it's easier for them to put Dragon Quest on the DS, though, just because it's never been a graphical showcase series necessarily. But,
Dragon Quest 4 through 6 were all ported to PS1, mm-hmm. and Dragon Quest 7 was a PS1 mm-hmm. game. So it wouldn't have been surprising at all for them to put Dragon Quest 9 on, say, PSP as opposed to DS, mm-hmm. in terms of what the fans would expect from the history of the series, what the graphic style could do on similar hardware. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that they're remaking Dragon Quest 4 on DS instead of PSP says a lot, because it's probably much easier to remake it on PSP,
mm-hmm. yeah,
because there was a PS1 version already. They could pretty much just port it to PS1,
yeah.
but instead of doing that, they took the time to actually remake it again for DS because the base
it's,
is
yeah,
so
it's just
bigger.
The sheer numbers, especially in Japan, obviously. You can't really argue with the DS's power in Japan. I mean, it has sold. So it's ahead of in Japan. It's ahead of where it is everywhere else because it kind of slowed down a little bit in the middle of the year. It's still ticking along very well. Still spent a lot of weeks outselling everything else, just at a lower level than what it was doing before. But of course, with the DSi, it's back up again, and I think the DSi is selling at a comparable pace to what the Lite was selling at when that launched. So the DS is going to continue to attract, at least, I mean, Nintendo's not showing a whole lot of interest for whatever reason, whether they're busy with other things or they're just so satisfied with how stuff like Mario Kart DS and New Super Mario Bros. Continues to sell. But from third parties, I think you will continue to see top properties, you know, with big, you know, relatively big amount of development resources, although obviously, you know, how big is limited with DS, going into them for years to come. Yeah, I really think so.
Well, I don't want to get too much in the DSi yet because I think we're about to take a break and we'll talk about it in the news/announcements part. But I think to get back to how we started on the DS when we're talking about first party lineup, and we, you know, when you went to E3 and Nintendo had essentially nothing to announce for DS.
Yeah, I mean, they had Rhythm Heaven.
What was their biggest?
Wasn't it the localized
Rhythm Heaven? Yeah, and we still don't know when that's coming out.
We already knew that. We already knew that Kirby was existed, so that wasn't really like an announcement.
Right.
Obviously,
Mystery Case Files Millionaire.
I mean, they started publishing random things from other developers that don't even make sense, like Millionaire. And then, you know, I guess when we saw the anemic first party lineup for DS in 2008, we all thought, well, they're gearing up for the follow up system. You know, and we all expected by the end of the year, they're probably going to announce DS2 or whatever. Yeah. And that's what was the most surprising thing to me about the DSi announcement, is that it is basically just the same platform.
Yeah,
it's just a tweak.
Exactly, yeah. And, therefore,
and so it still doesn't explain the bizarre lineup of Nintendo first party handheld development.
Another surprise.
What the fuck are they making?
Another surprise is they seem to be leaving stuff on the table a bit. I mean, Professor Layton came out on early in the year. And it did pretty well. It sold quite well in America. It actually came out very recently in Europe, and it's killing. It's doing brilliantly. I think it's piggybacking onto the whole brain game thing a little better than it.
As well as
absolutely. It seems to be doing a little better in that regard. But anyway, they haven't even announced the others yet. I mean, what you would think they'd be right on top of that, because that just seems to.
I think at this point, Level 5 maybe even announced a fourth one in Japan.
Am I wrong about that? The third one just came out.
They had one at TGS. Was it just the third one?
Layton's going like sort of cross-media, you know, all sorts of stuff. Like, there's going to be a movie, apparently, in Japan and all sorts of... So Layton's kind of exploding, but they just released like...
You know, if they were going to do like an animated movie of Professor Layton, I would watch that shit, because the art is gorgeous. I love the art.
The art is gorgeous, but a movie would just entail every 3 minutes a random person stopping the professor and saying, "Here's a puzzle."
It was a good reason, but in all fairness, I was impressed with the conceit for why that was the case in this game.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to explain it.
That you're in Puzzle Town?
They're not going to explain it in future games quite the same way, presumably. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, welcome to the village where everyone is obsessed with puzzles. It's just totally hilarious, I think, and intentionally so. But you know, Layton was a very nice first party release. Kind of a little bit surprising that they brought it to America at all, because it did seem, you know, in some ways particularly Japanese, and yet I think it translated very well in the end, and I'm glad that it did well. I am actually probably going to pick it up again soon. I lost it for several months and just found it again, so I'm looking forward to trying to get back into it. I had made it pretty far into the game before I lost it. But yeah, I do think it's a bit odd that they haven't said anything about the sequels, and possibly part of the reason for that is they didn't want to sabotage sales of the first one through the holidays.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, maybe they think this is going to be another evergreen thing for them, and they just want it to keep going. If so, I think they should probably ramp up marketing a little, because it never really has been marketed all that well. It seemed like a game that was not really.
I think I remember during the launch period, they marketed pretty hard here and there. I mean, especially for such
a game.
Yeah,
I think
they did a good job.
I think they did a good job of pushing it in the gaming media circles, which aren't necessarily going to cotton on to something that boils down to psychometric testing. But the thing is that I'm not so sure that they did quite as well with the broader kind of... I mean, they've marketed it very heavily.
Right, with the Brain Age crowd.
Yeah, they've marketed it very...
I don't think they really made the connection that they should have made with
Brain
Age.
And this is one case where I'd say they seem to be doing a very good job of that here, very many months later,
right.
So I suppose they bloody well should do. They've had long enough to think about what they're going to do with it. They do seem to have made that connection in sort of people's minds beyond the people that follow the gaming media. So maybe next time they will, but I hope they release more of them, but it just seems like they're not that really... I mean, we've got Rhythm Heaven sometime early next year, and Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon, and that's about it that I can think of that's sort of on the docket.
Well, there's the Pokemon Platinum
that I'm sure will come out in the West at some point
in 2009.
That's like
it's a re-release. At this point,
Pokemon games... they don't really count for anything anymore, because it's just inevitable that they're released, and it's inevitable people will buy them up, so it's just in the back of our heads now. It's like, oh yeah, Pokemon. Eh.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're not interesting, and I think that's really sad. But yeah, they're not... I mean, we just did get Pokemon Ranger 2.
Oh boy.
And I've heard that it's a modest improvement on the first one, which is kind
again,
of shocking to me that they even bothered.
From what I've read, is that there's an element of the roster update, which kind of went on with James' favorite game, Mystery Dungeon, where in many ways, it's just like, oh, look, it's the game that you already played, but now it's got the guys from Diamond and Pearl in it. You know, that's like the... And to people who are like hardcore Pokemon fans, that is a big deal. But as a game, it doesn't really advance it very much.
It's not really a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just All right, well, I think we should take a quick break, and we'll cover some of the news of 2008. All right, we are back with the final segment of today's show, or tonight's show, or whenever you're listening to this. We're going to talk about the news of 2008, and specifically the Nintendo news, or maybe the lack thereof early in the year.
Yeah.
We had a... This is, I think, what Wendy was talking about when he said like the first half of the year was so dry. In terms of the games released, it actually did really well. In terms of the games announced, it was indeed terrible.
We crave information on a constant basis. And if we don't get what we want...
Well, I mean, it wasn't just the sort of lack of it, was it? It was that, you know, so we went through the first half of the year and everything that we already knew about was coming out and, you know, most of it was really good and that was fun. But it was like we were getting closer and closer and it's like we don't have a clue what is coming out like in 2 months' time. The entire second half was unknown.
Oh, God.
And so it was kind of... It was kind of like people were kind of excited in a way. It's like they could announce something at E3 really awesome. We could be playing it in 2 months' time.
Actually, they did. Actually, we did get that.
Wario Land.
It was called Wario Land. The problem is people weren't actually playing it 2 months later because they didn't buy it.
Apparently they should have. Yeah, that's, I just picked that up, actually, and it is really good. I'm very, very pleased.
Oh, dude, and the more you play it, the more you'll realize how
brilliant it is. The secret levels
because
are
the
very
later
much
levels,
more advanced, aren't they? They're very, there's
deliberate
step.
And wait until you find the secret levels that are hidden within the secret levels.
Yeah.
I mean, the more advanced stages, that like the last couple worlds and all... there are almost as many secret levels as there are normal, and the more you get into it, the more amazing the level, and the more weird and just totally, you know, out of the box the level design gets to be, and that game just makes me smile when I play it. I mean,
that was pretty awesome. Like, you know, Nintendo completely ignored it, by the way, at E3 and when it came out. At Good Feel. Like, this wasn't some, you know, when people first saw it and they hadn't heard about it, they just thought it was some cheapy, you know, get it out the door thing, and like, you know, Bettenhausen
it
looked like a Super NES game and stuff like
that. What it really seemed like. It was
it doesn't.
It was going off crappy screenshots or scans or something.
Sure.
But, you know, the point is that there was that impression. It turns out they were making it for ages. It looks incredible. And, you know, yeah, it's kind of soft and easy on the surface, but if you get further, there's plenty of sort of challenging and interesting and taxing stuff in there. So, I mean, you really shouldn't downplay its significance, because it is kind of, you know, it's kind of, because it was kind of doled out in chunks, you kind of don't realize how awesome it is. It's like, yeah, they've just got this 2D platform, like hand-drawn animation and all that, you know, and they're actually going to really put all this effort into it, and, you know, they're going to release it. It's, I mean, if they did that with, I really hope they give Yoshi to Good Feel. Because it's very much like a Yoshi game, actually.
That would be great.
That would be awesome, rather than Artoon.
I feel like it is probably my number one overlooked game of 2008. And you know, a lot of people talk about Boom Blocks, but that's exactly why it's not the most overlooked game, because a lot of people talk about
it. Well, look
it,
at
like,
the critical reception
Boom Blocks,
alone. I mean,
it was
because
fairly,
they were,
I mean,
both games were quite well received, but I feel like Boom Blocks... You know, as we found out later, EA was actually pretty happy with how it sold. I think they kind of got away with murder with not marketing that game, and yet somehow it still sold.
Yeah, it could. I think we still believe it could have sold so much better. I mean, it's not...
Sure.
It's not the easiest thing to market.
Yeah, it could have.
It's a minor fumble. But yeah, I mean, but the point is, yeah, there were some that really... there were some reviews, Parrish's in particular, that spoke quite ill of Wario Land's substance, if not its style. And
he's completely wrong.
Yeah,
I like Jeremy, but he's a nice guy. But he's absolutely completely wrong about Wario. It is, it is maybe my favorite Wii game of the year. Really, I think it's absolutely excellent.
It's up there.
And I just feel like, you know, Nintendo pretty much ignored it. Certainly at E3, they buried it. The only way you could play it was in their private booth by appointment, and then you got, what, 2 minutes with it? And they didn't even say the name of it at their press conference.
They Metroid Prime 3'd it pretty
much. This is arguably the best game on Wii all year. It's their game.
Well, from them.
And they basically pretended that it didn't exist, you know? I just don't understand it, and they really... when it comes down to it, I can almost guarantee by the end of the year that Boom Blocks will outsell Wario Land. And they're both equally fantastic games, but I just think it's really sad that Boomblox gets a lot of indie cred. You know, people are kind of wringing their hands over, you know, why don't people talk more about Boomblox? And the fact is, people are talking about it. It has great word of mouth. I feel like Wario Land is the excellent game for Wii this year that really almost nobody talked about. Everybody just kind of, you know, poo-pooed it. And then when it finally came out, people said, you know, actually, this is awesome, but they were mostly ignored,
well,
I feel like.
If it really felt like Nintendo just kind of put it out there and it was like, okay, well, here it is, take it or leave it.
Yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
We're on
they seem to think that these kinds of games sell themselves, I think, is what it was apparently. And obviously, Wii Music doesn't. I guess that's kind of where. But it kind of goes into the hall. For, I guess we can't talk about this topic without going back, although we swore we wouldn't, about E3. You know, the whole thing about the curious approach that they had. Yeah, the stuff like Rhythm Tengoku was again another thing that was kind of, it was announced in the press kit, but you wouldn't have known it if you were actually there, hardly.
Right.
I mean, it was playable, but again, I think it was quite sort of, you know, downplayed, and you know, they just didn't really seem interested in sort of pushing the stuff that they had.
If you go back and look at the way in the past Nintendo has used E3 to explain concepts that are kind of hard to wrap your head around. They've spent copious time on things like Pac-Man Versus and Electroplankton, and these are games that they didn't even sell per se. Mm-hmm. You know, like they didn't. I mean, maybe at the time they had intentions of actually packaging these and making a lot of profit off of them, but they ended up being more like weird tech/market experiments. Mm-hmm. And then you have something like Rhythm Tengoku, which is a game that will be sold.
Oh,
you know,
and it is selling in Japan like hotcakes.
Exactly,
it's
and
huge.
Yet it's a game that doesn't make much sense until you play it or until you get a pretty thorough explanation of it. It seems like the press conference is the place to do that. I mean, if Rhythm Tengoku is going to be the next big DS game in America, if it's going to be the next game that they manage to replicate the success of in Japan, and bring it over to America, they're going to have to do a better job of selling it.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to explain to people just what the fuck it is and how you play it. And they chose to pretend that it didn't exist. And it's not that it wasn't coming out in 2008, because they spent plenty of time on Wii Sports Resort,
sure.
And that's not coming out in 2008 either. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like, and Wendy and I were both at E3, we both went to the press conference, and both of us walked out of there with our eyes spinning. Like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Where am I right now?
Of course,
I just felt like Nintendo doesn't even know me anymore.
Some of the reason why...
This is the company that raised me in some sense, you know? I mean, I think they deserve some co-authorship along with my parents for making me who I am. And I felt like, you know, I went home for Christmas and no one could remember my name. That's what it felt like in that press conference.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think some of the reason why it fell as flat as it did is that, though, you know, we talked about Wii Sports Resort and, of course, Motion Plus, which is a huge deal, but they did that. They announced it the day before. So once everybody knew about that and they'd sort of had a little time to digest the implications that they were kind of conceding the Wii Remote wasn't everything they had hoped it would be, that part was taken out. And then it's like, oh, well, what are they going to do with it? And it was, you know, just another kind of Wii Sports game that was going to
be. Well, yeah, but on top of that, I mean, they just announced the thing beforehand. Like, oh my God, they're announcing this now to get it out of the way so they can show us all these games they're going to put out this year.
Then there was nothing.
And there was like, okay, oh, Wii Sports Resort, okay, it's going to be cool, and that's it.
Crickets.
What the fuck?
Crickets.
Yeah. And of course, there was Animal Crossing, which we all expected as well. There was no shock value there, although you could argue it was somewhat surprising. It was so identical to its predecessors.
So lame.
I guess, you know, with the GameCube version, obviously, the N64 version hadn't even come out in the West, right? So it's kind of,
right.
You know, you'd expect it to be basically a remake. And then with the DS, well, there's only so much you can do, and it's kind of aspiring to live up to the console version, so that's fine. But then for it's kind of like the real second console version, and it's pretty much the same thing. I'm sure, I mean, I haven't played Animal Crossing, but I must imagine there must be some people that like Animal Crossing a lot that are quite disappointed with that. That they would have liked to.
You forgot the SD version of the GameCube game that was only released in Japan.
Oh.
It's a really weird, obscure version of it. But they, do you remember the SD card adapter for GameCube that Nintendo announced? Yeah. It was a GameCube memory card that you stuck an SD card into. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's only one game that supported that thing that was ever released in Japan, and it's a special version of Animal Crossing, and it has like two new features. I mean, it's barely different. So my problem is that this, and you know, the funny thing is, the original GameCube version was barely different from the N64
version. Yeah, but I guess that kind of makes, like I said, it kind of makes sense from the point of view that it didn't really come out outside of Japan, so at least for the Western markets.
Yeah, but they didn't even upgrade the graphics, is what I'm saying. I mean, it was pretty much just...
like, not even... You didn't even have to have the disc in. It was great.
Right. It all fit in the RAM. But I think my problem with Animal Crossing is that it's not just this one time that they've done what they did with City Folk, where they're pretty much just releasing the same game again. It's that they've never done anything but sense, this is like the sixth version of Animal Crossing, and it's almost the same as the very first one for N64.
Trend. Is that it is, but I would contend it's kind of more forgivable or understandable in all the other cases.
Yeah, at least on the DS, I mean, at least, you know, they're moving it to a portable. There's only so much you can do with it.
They added online.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big deal for DS.
With this,
it just
seems like, you know, they're really... I can only imagine that people who really loved Animal Crossing, there must have been some greater level of expectation that this would finally be when they took it forward somewhat, and it doesn't seem like they've done that, really.
It just seems like a very cynical cash-in. And the other weird thing is that, you know, even at E3, where Nintendo was very clearly focused on the casual or the blue ocean gamer, you know, their new audience that they've created with Wii, that they've reached out to, they didn't do a very good job of explaining what Animal Crossing is. It was more like they spent the entire show having to defend it to the game critics who were there, who were, you know, the only people allowed into E3 this year. They just totally ignored the people who were actually at E3 and pretended that they could reach this larger market. And the funny thing is, I was at E3 the year where they first showed the GameCube version for English audiences. And this must have been like 2003, 2004. And we were all very surprised that this actually came to America. You know, we had heard of it. We knew of the N64 version. We knew of the GameCube release. And it was one of those very Japanese games that we didn't really think would ever be brought to America. And when Nintendo did announce it for the North American audience, everybody kind of applauded. We were like, this is awesome that you guys are bringing this over, that you're taking a big risk. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being a big success. And part of the reason that it was a big success, and in fact, you have to remember, Animal Crossing for GameCube primarily sold to hardcore gamers on GameCube.
Yeah.
It was the built-in Nintendo first-party audience, the people who buy every Nintendo game. It was the base. That's who they sold it to, and the reason that those people bought it is Nintendo actually sold it to them. They marketed it to them. I remember at that E3, I might have been the director at that time, or else I was the managing editor or whatever of the site. I got sent to this sort of press conference, you know, this sub press conference during the show, where Nintendo had Miyamoto and Eguchi-san and a couple other guys, and they were showing off Animal Crossing and trying to explain it to the American gaming press, because a lot of them didn't know what it was. And I knew what it was, but I didn't know that much about it. I'd never played it before. And this was like an hour and a half event where they let us play it. They showed, you know, they went through a lot of stuff. There was a Q&A where we could talk to them about, you know, what is this game? Why are you bringing it to America? Do you really think this is going to work in English? You know, what kind of game is it? It was a very new kind of game at the time. We'd never seen anything like that. Comparing that event to what they did this year at E3 2008, it's just shocking to me that they did such a better version of it like 5 years ago.
Well, and of course, as you say, I mean, the
problem
is...
this year, they just kind of shat it out at E3 and said, there you go, you all know what Animal Crossing is,
right? Yeah, that's the problem,
right?
Because the people in the audience, they have already had that experience, you know, like a developer roundtable type thing, you know, when they were doing that this time. They're just, you know, at best, you're going to do what you've done before. So, I mean, the whole point, it would seem to me, I guess, with this sort of fairly conservative version, is to just sell it to people that haven't bought it for. Like you said, the people who bought Animal Crossing before, at least on console for sure, are the base. So this time we're going to sell it to everyone else. So it just seems like they didn't quite know how, you know, the people in that room are not really the way you sell it to those customers outside, are they? Because they are the gaming media. So it just didn't kind of seem like they were quite sure who they were talking to.
Exactly. And, you know, Animal Crossing, the big thing to mention when you talk about Animal Crossing, City Folk, and E3 2008 is that this was the very half-hearted answer that Reggie brought.
See, I think that was a total backpedal, wasn't it? I honestly believe that they had they had something else that, for developmental reasons or something, they had to back out of.
Sure. Well, regardless, this is what we were presented with. I mean, through several of, you know, through basically the first half of 2008, Reggie was going into interviews. He made multiple comments to the effect of, you know, we don't have anything announced right now for the last half of 2008 for the core gamer, but we will. Just wait for E3. And that's basically what he was saying in so many words. He said this multiple times. Mm-hmm. Basically, wait for E3,
You know,
there will be hardcore games at E3.
As well. He said, we've got one game. So he's like this idea that, yeah, and I don't think Animal Crossing really fits the profile of this one game that's a shining symbol of sort of core gamer. I mean, it's true. It does sell to the...
It maybe could have
it
been.
It does sell to the base.
If City Folk was designed for the pre-existing Animal Crossing base, and it added a lot of new stuff, or it did something really different that made the core Animal Crossing base, which is millions of people, get excited, then they might actually have pulled this off. But because City Folk is such a rehash, they can't sell it to the people.
And of course, Matt Casamassina made this observation. It's a very good one. People have seen the commercials for Animal Crossing at this point with, you know, sort of the young adult women or whatever in their lovely apartments chatting to each other about going fishing or whatever. That doesn't jibe very well with the sort of, you know, the last bastion of hardcore gaming that it was
for the year.
You know, does it? I mean, come on. I honestly believe there was something there that maybe we've heard about now. Sin and Punishment, Punch Out, you know, once we got to the fall. Or maybe it's something we still haven't heard about. The Kid Icarus that's been, you know, routinely sloshed around.
Or
something. An original IP.
Something that we still don't know about. Maybe something we'll never know about. Maybe it got cancelled. But I think there must have been something that just got shunted, and then they were left holding.
Anybody who's really anticipating a reboot of Kid Icarus should really go back and play the original, and that'll cure you of that very quickly.
I think it's just a
series that should stay dead.
It would just be like a brand. That's what I think. It wouldn't really even have anything to do with it. I just don't really see that it would. You know, I mean, I guess unless you made like some new 2D Metroidvania type game, but what are the chances of that?
At the same time, because it's been so long since the last Kid Icarus game came out, does it really have enough cachet to bother naming a new game why don't you just give it a new name? Like, who gives a fuck about Kid Icarus 20 years later? Just
call
it something else.
Well, there are
else.
People that do.
That's
but
what I don't get.
There are people that do, but they're not that many of them, I don't think. So it is curious that you hear so much about it, but, I mean, maybe there's something in it. Maybe it's just something that they want to see happen. You know, I mean, Tingle got his own game, so anything's in play.
That's true.
All right, so
that was
E3.
Obviously E3
was a big disappointment. Yeah. I mean, almost universally, everybody thought Nintendo did a pretty terrible job at E3. And the sad thing was they even had really good games there that they didn't talk about. They had stuff like Wario and Rhythm Heaven that they just pretended didn't exist almost. And instead they focused on this crap like Animal Crossing and Wii Music that was clearly inferior to other aspects of their catalog that they probably should have been showcasing. Yeah. It just, the whole thing reeked of brand new management, people like Cammy Dunaway and Denise Kegler and who knows who else at Nintendo of America. You know, it just seemed like they were in chaos.
Yeah, you have to think
they
that
just didn't know Absolutely. They just didn't know what to do with themselves.
They went kind
you know?
Of,
like
they opened it up to the third party angle, and they kind of went with these brands that people would know, like, let's play up the fact that we're going to have Call of Duty on Wii, or Chinatown Wars with Grand Theft Auto, with Star Wars games, you know. So, again, it didn't really seem like those names mean more to people that are tangentially aware of games rather than the gaming media that was sat in front of them.
Mm-hmm. It just seemed right. It seemed like the whole thing was planned by people who really didn't know their audience.
Exactly. Hey. Well, they didn't know. I mean, Nintendo knows their audience. They didn't know that specific audience at E3. Mm-hmm. Or if they did, they just chose to go right over their heads. Yeah. Hey. But you know what? Here's the thing: gaming critics are a vocal bunch. Mm-hmm. They're very opinionated, and they don't like to be ignored.
Yeah.
And when you fill up the fucking Kodak Theater with us. And you sit there and talk past us for 2 hours, we don't really take kindly to that. Yeah. We don't appreciate it. And that's basically what Nintendo did. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds very arrogant or, you know, self-absorbed, but this is the way the media works. I mean, you can't call Obama can't call a presidential press conference with all the White House press corps there and then talk about sports.
Talk about his puppy.
I know he can talk about sports. He's actually got really good ideas about the BCS and the playoff system and everything. But you can't do that when you have the White House press corps there. Yeah. You have to talk about politics. You have to talk about policy. And if you don't, you're going to get some really bad press from the people who were invited, who showed up, and were ignored.
Don't put us in
and that's exactly what happened with E3. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we went from E3 to TGS a couple months later, which was night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa. TGS was amazing. And the great thing was Nintendo wasn't even there.
No.
I mean, a lot of this was sort of pre-TGS a couple days before. But TGS was a brilliant time for Nintendo fans. I mean, it was just an embarrassment of riches in terms of all the announcements, all the exciting stuff we had coming our way. And then when TGS proper started, we had a lot of really great third-party stuff to look at, too.
Yeah, that's true. You had No More Heroes 2 was announced around then. Obviously, you had...
Let's Tap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to overstate its importance, but it's pretty awesome. You
and
know?
there was Muramasa from the Vanillaware guys, and loads and loads more DS RPGs, and Monster Hunter 3 that's going to take over Japan sometime. Yeah, that and that's the Wii's Dragon Quest IX, in a way. It's this sort of big series, in Japan, this huge manga series, and they decided to put it on, the Nintendo format. That's going to be a big earthquake when it hits.
Well, in the, Level 5 game with Studio Ghibli. That will be megaton in Japan, and I just really hope it comes to America, because Studio Ghibli, it has a lot of followers.
Is that the one that comes with the
here
book?
In America, too, and I don't even like anime, and I look forward to Studio Ghibli movies because they're to me they transcend anime. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously, I don't watch anime, but I will see every Studio Ghibli movie because they're amazing. Yep. And
they're pretty much the Pixar or like Disney of anime, basically.
I think in this day and age, Pixar is a much better comparison than Disney. But yeah, they really are. I mean, there are people who go see every Pixar movie, even though they don't care about animated movies. Mm-hmm. They don't care about children's movies. They don't care about computer-generated movies. They care about Pixar, and that's pretty much the way Studio Ghibli is. And that game is – I can't even remember how to pronounce it. I'm really hoping for an English name. So. But that game will be – amazingly massive when it comes out in Japan, and being made by Level 5, I have a very good feeling it's going to be amazingly good too, you know. So
TGS,
so much big stuff.
They had
I
don't know if they announced it or at least they showed the trailer for Monster Hunter 3 for Wii.
I
saw that, I was like, holy crap, this is like an actual real RPG. And
well, it was announced quite a
while
ago.
Yeah, it was back at the end of last year, actually, like when they announced.
Yeah,
they
originally announced it, but then people kind of forgot about it, and then all of a sudden, here comes the new trailer and all this new information.
Yeah, well,
I was like,
I guess with that
wow.
one, Yeah, I mean, with that one, I guess Nintendo probably wanted to get the word out as soon as possible. Like,
oh, yeah.
Before the game was even, like, far along at all. And now, of course, it is further along and we're seeing more of it. But, of course, you know, it's not the holy trinity of game announcements out of that, as far as I'm concerned, was Punch-Out, Sin and Punishment 2, and Mario & Luigi 3.
Oh, God,
3,
Sin and Punishment 2. Well, the second I heard that come out, like, Punch-Out, that was inevitable.
That sounded like a
Sin
joke.
Out 2.
Like, it was like, because, I mean, anybody that was following the live blogs of the live blogs, and then it says, like, at the same, you know, it comes Punch-Out and Sin and Punishment 2. I'm like, what?
No,
you're taking the piss, aren't you? You know? And then you just check all the other ones. Well, they wouldn't all make the same joke unless they're all referencing the same live blog, which is like, somewhat possible.
You're like, are these the same people who said I could get the Triforce and Ocarina?
Except it's way more vindictive.
Yeah, but no, I'm sure you guys felt the same way when the trailer for Sin and Punishment 2 came out, when it was officially real.
Yeah.
It was like an oh my god moment. And I haven't had an oh my god moment from Nintendo in the good way for a very long time.
In a good way.
True. No, it's
like
true.
I was like an oh my god instead of an oh my god.
I mean,
yeah, I think my biggest oh my god moment of the past couple years was when we first heard the Wii name.
That was
May of 2006.
That was a WTF.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a facepalm moment.
No, I mean, it's true, because I mean, we did talk about it when me, John, and James did the E3 preview show. We kind of talked about, you know, Pie in the Sky, Sin and Punishment 2. The only thing that made you think it was possible was just how well it would work. You know, it's almost too good to pass up, but when you think of how ridiculously niche it is, and I doubt it even sold any copies in Japan when it launched, and it didn't go anywhere else, but supposedly the Virtual Console sales had a role to play. So,
well, the funny thing was, I think it sold something like a little less than 100,000 copies on Virtual Console. Well, what's great is that was enough to convince them that it was worth doing a sequel. I mean, it just kind of gives you an idea of what Treasure expects from its games, because they are so niche. They're sort of like Atlus games. They don't have million sellers. Treasure just doesn't do that. I mean, maybe Gradius 5 for Konami sold a million, but they're self-published, or they're, you know, their own non-licensed franchises. They don't expect to sell a huge number of games, and that's okay. It's like Bangayo Spirits, which we talked about earlier. That game didn't sell gangbusters, but they probably made it for so little money that hopefully they made a profit on it.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, it's very possible.
So,
I mean, they have a
that's what surprised me.
They have a built-in audience that will buy every single Treasure game out there regardless. So.
Exactly, and they know that Sin and Punishment 2 will have the ultimate word of mouth.
That's the whole thing. They service that audience. They don't skimp.
Yeah.
They're like, we will give you exactly what you want. And you know, their audience is just like, okay, bring it on.
It's very exciting that, you know, but obviously the fact is it's a Treasure game, but it will be, of course, Nintendo publishing it again as they did with the first one. So it's just nice that they're supporting something like that. But it's kind of a good way to do it on the sort of, it's like, you know, we talk about how they have this attitude that it's like they secretively give us the hardcore games, like that, you know, that they don't want the cool kids finding out that they're actually doing this. And Sin and Punishment is very much like that because it is so niche. Whereas, say for instance, if you did a really, you know, all out hardcore sequel to Star Fox, that would be kind of more mainstream. And it kind of makes me, on the kind of sad side, it kind of makes me think they won't do that. I think, well, Sin and Punishment 2 will take care of those people.
No, I think Star Fox will eventually come out.
Nintendo Star Fox will come out on Wii. I just wonder what they'll do with it. You know, whether it'll be like what we would like it to be. Because Sin and Punishment
is...
You know, I think Retro Studios is making it.
That would be nice. That would
give
me
some...
They're busy making Kid Icarus, sorry.
If we're going to make predictions for 2009, that's my prediction. Retro Studios
Or
Nintendo will announce Star Fox, whatever, from Retro Studios.
It's one of the unanswered questions about that sort of pervaded through this year. Obviously, Metroid Prime launched in August, and all that time over a year, haven't heard a peep, but other than that some of their top men are leaving. You know,
that's right. They're working on it.
But nothing but bad news from Retro. Yeah, so, I don't know, we haven't talked much about the DSi. I think in terms of news for the year, we should probably get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's big because of the digital distribution angle, but this is Nintendo embracing it further. You know, they haven't had the biggest sort of almost... sort of embracing attitude towards online, digital, any of that stuff, the storage situation with Wii and all that. But with DSi, you know, this is a lot more progressive than perhaps we've seen, and it is really the meaningful difference between, you know, the gadget side is kind of feeble, kind of gimmicky.
Well, I mean, I see what you're saying, Greg. It sounds like, you know, it's kind of the impetus for this piece of hardware. But at the same time, this is the third version of DS, so I don't know how progressive they're really being.
With their attitude towards digital distribution, you know, that even though obviously they've had all these concerns with, like, you know, the R4 cards and all that sort of stuff, that, you know, they are going forward with saying, look, we're going to have an SD card slot on there because, you know, you can obviously use it for your camera, but also you're going to be able to store stuff on there, and it's going to have internal storage, and you'll be able to download these new original games and all this sort of stuff.
And it interfaces with Wii.
Yeah, I mean, actually,
through multiple ways. I mean, there's going to be wireless. I think they're planning to kind of leverage some of the features of DSi for different, new and different ways to connect wirelessly with Wii. But then also, you've got the fact that they share a memory format. Yeah. So now you can just take photos or whatever and just move them over to Wii. So that's a really nice feature.
Yeah, I just like the fact they've gone, you know, that they've embraced that side more, you know, all those. And I mean, I guess the thing is that when we look at something else that pretty big that happened this year was WiiWare. New service, it launched, yeah. I think it was in May, or when was it exactly? April?
It was May in North America.
Yeah, May in North America.
It was announced actually last year in March of 2007 at GDC, and it took quite a while for it to finally launch and actually be available to the public. And it seemed like everybody was really excited, and then it actually came out, and everybody was like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, considering,
and
I guess
it really took a while for it to build back up, and people actually start to wonder, hey, I wonder what's coming out Monday. It could
it's very important that you bring up the fact that it was sort of, you know, sort of germinating for such a long period of time, because you kind of then have an expectation that when it does come sometime after that, it's going to be with some, you know, big flagship games that Nintendo may have produced or whatever, and that didn't really happen. You had Dr. Mario.
Yeah, I mean,
you had Pokemon Ranch.
I think the closest was Lost Winds. I mean, Dr. Mario is really, again, sort of this, sort of like very cheap rehash of things they'd done before. Really not a great package overall, and not even made in-house.
Yeah.
So I think Lost Winds was,
but that, of course,
the
true was independent, independently developed. You know, you might have thought Nintendo would push it themselves a little more, but they really didn't. They've pretty much taken a pass through the whole year until you get to the art style games, the repurposing of bits of the bit generations. But even then,
they're just publishing those. That's
so I mean, creatively, they're not really. What's interesting with the DSiWare angle is that we're already seeing that they are sort of, you know, they are actually going to create some more unique kind of things for that. Like, there's going to be these, like, WarioWare games that use the camera that are going to be downloadable. I mean, it already seems just that in itself is more of a sort of a reallocation of their creative talents to digital distribution than they've done in the better part of a year on WiiWare. That's just kind of weird to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still not exactly sure what Nintendo was thinking with WiiWare, like what their goal is with it. You know, you hear people say, well, I mean, the point of it is for Nintendo to let all these independent developers develop on their system. It's like, no, that's not why they did it. I mean, if you look at the history of Nintendo, they are such control freaks over what goes on their platforms. They have no interest, really, in helping smaller companies develop for them. In fact, typically their developer relations have been pretty poor.
I mean, even with bigger third parties,
all over.
Yeah.
Well, can you still say
big
that?
Companies,
you know, even
so,
just recently with WiiWare, you mean you've heard? I've never heard of most of these developers making games for WiiWare and good games on WiiWare. I mean, obviously, 2D Boy, World
yeah,
of You.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
That's,
well, it's their first game.
Well, yes, that's their first game. So why is Nintendo listening to this developer that never made a game anywhere before?
That's the thing. I don't think Nintendo was listening to them. I mean, I think Nintendo created this platform where, yes, very small independent developers can find some success and can make interesting things. I don't think that's why Nintendo did WiiWare.
Well, then why is it happening?
I think Well, I think they did it to collect licensing fees.
Obviously, yeah. That's the goal with making anything Nintendo does, is to make money, and clearly they're making some money. And as a result,
yeah, but
we're
getting
that's some
the good thing. Games off if you look at, but what I'm saying is, in terms of collecting licensing fees, I don't think Nintendo's leveraged WiiWare very well.
Well, they're actually far, apparently they're far more lenient than the other services, aren't they? The licensing fees are WiiWare.
Sure, that doesn't have that much to do with how much money they make off the service. But, I mean, the thing is, you know, the stuff that Microsoft does that everybody complains about, you have to go through certification to get an Xbox Live Arcade game. You have to go through all these hoops. There's certain required features you have to put in. That's very annoying for developers, and it delays game development. It makes it more expensive. But all that stuff is very intensive for Microsoft to deal with. They have entire offices full of people who deal with just getting these arcade games up to snuff. Nintendo is basically saying, whatever.
Yeah, it's a
laissez-faire
approach.
I mean, it's the easier option for them is to just be hands-off. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, I mean, it's good. It's overall a pretty good effect that they're doing it that way. But they're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because that way they don't have to spend money
on just interesting
some kind of
that,
creating
that, you know,
some kind of process.
It does seem like the I mean, I guess one of the things it's for, or could be for, is actually, you know, making games like the Bit Generation games that are being ported, but new ones. And supposedly, again, there's going to be new ones for DSiWare. But it's just strange that they haven't seemed to embrace it very. And you've got one new one, you've got Cubello, with one WiiWare, but they haven't really embraced it. But we have reaped the benefits elsewhere. Obviously, Mega Man 9 is one of my highlights of the year. I enjoyed that a lot. Yeah.
Although, all I'm saying is the things that Nintendo's doing with DSiWare is what I expected them to do with WiiWare.
Sure,
because
I agree.
That makes sense. That I understand why they created this digital distribution platform on the DSi, because they can sell their own first party games. Yes, they can open it up for all these other companies. It is an innate part of the system. It is, in fact, probably the reason the system exists. So people who buy it will be more prone to buy those games. Whereas with WiiWare, in a lot of ways, you know, the average person doesn't know what WiiWare is. They don't know that there are games coming out for download, brand new games. They have no idea. When they, you know, you go out and buy a Wii and Wii Fit for your kid for Christmas, you don't know what that is. Nintendo doesn't really tell anybody about it. It's all very grassroots. It's all like third-party developers that you've never heard of. You know, like a game comes out and you've never even seen a screenshot of it before. You have no idea what it is. It's just like, if their goal is to make licensing fees off of selling these games, they're not doing a very good job of selling them. And they're hosting games by companies that don't really have the means to sell these games themselves.
Well, I mean,
you know?
I think
they don't have marketing budgets.
I mean, I've always looked at Nintendo as, you know, as long as their stuff is doing okay, anything else is just gravy.
But they don't even have their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's
on WiiWare.
The weird part.
That's the crazy thing. That's the part that I don't understand. They don't even have their own shit to sell.
Here's an idea. You know, obviously, WiiWare's just starting out. We're just kind of bare and sparse and kind of haphazardly put together. But now that the DSi was out, maybe WiiWare was kind of like a test bed for the DSi. And after they release the DSi and see how that goes, they can take what they learned from that and put it back on the Wii. So it was kind of building on each other to improve the services.
It's definitely not, you know, because I think if they sort of reconfigure their development teams or whatever to create these like little, or maybe dedicated to digital distribution games, then obviously those guys could just be eminently transferable to a WiiWare project. So then when you've kind of got that set aside, then there's that complementarity between DSiWare and WiiWare that means that, we could see a sort of spin-off benefit from the success of DSiWare if it is big.
And there's another thing, too, that I just kind of thought of, especially, you know, with the iTunes and the iPhone and all the apps there. You know, starting out, everybody was doing great because there's only so much stuff you could get. But nowadays, it's really hard to find newer, neat stuff. Most people just gravitate to the free stuff anyway. On the Wii, you know, again, it was kind of beginning, people bought whatever because that was all there to get. But now that there's kind of a glut of games, kind of a feast of games, I guess you could say, a little too much stuff to buy. So there are a couple of games I want to get that I just can't. I don't have time for. I can't afford to.
And of course, you know, the storage issue remains a constraint on just
and
how
there's
much
a storage
you can
issue.
Feast
so
on.
Maybe Nintendo is kind of purposely limiting themselves just so they can kind of make sure everything is working okay again. They'll really get going with the DSi and see if that link with the DS and the Wii. And once that goes, you know, they could really take off.
especially on the Wii side, there are plenty of reasons why, you know, the storage and for those other reasons that they could have been just keeping out of it a little bit. And that could be an explanation, but, you know, still.
It's odd, but, I mean, it doesn't seem like they were that enthused by it, but, well, you know, they may come back.
Well, the thing is, I think also to a certain degree, it's it may be that Nintendo wasn't entirely confident that the concept would work. So they were like, okay, well, we're not going to, like, really devote any of our resources to putting games out on this for the time being.
Yeah, that goes back to those things. It's a test bed.
It could have been a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know. Sometimes it might, especially with the old perception of Nintendo, you know, being this sort of very insular kind of fan base, and that's all that owns the console. Obviously, Wii has very much surpassed that, but, you know, the perhaps more so the online part, that, you know, if they don't push it, it'll never get off the ground. Now, it seems to be getting off the ground now better by itself, mostly with stuff like World of Goo.
Yeah, I think that's what Nintendo wanted to see. Like, do we really need to put our
they decided that this was going to sink or swim, not based on the fact that they were going to have, like, a little, you know, 2D Mario on there or anything like that. You know, they were like, no, this is going to have to make it on its own, basically, and then maybe they will reap the rewards of that later.
Yeah, and the other side of it is that if Nintendo did really heavily push their stuff, obviously everybody's going to gravitate toward Nintendo stuff first, instead of kind of overlook some of these other smaller games that would have been good.
Well, but that's all right by them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, of course it'd be right for them in the short term, but in the long term, they knew they probably had to build up these, you know, get the confidence in the third party.
I don't know,
small
it's difficult.
You know, say, hey, you can put your stuff on here and it'll sell by itself without.
Let me put it this way. Nintendo put more development resources for the 64DD than they have for WiiWare.
Oh, that's devastating.
The DD was dead 2 years before it even came out. The WiiWare is available on millions and millions of systems all over the world. Yeah. I think it doesn't make any sense.
I think we should get the F-Zero X expansion kit for WiiWare. Like, if you bought it on Virtual Console, they link up or whatever.
There you go. Okay, well, I think we've kind of hit the stopping point on the show, so I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to these guys for being here, especially our special guest, Steven
Rodriguez. Special.
Yes.
Hey, he's Andy Capable.
Oh, dear. All right. On that note, I actually also want to thank Greg for putting the notes together. They were really helpful. You guys listening to this can't see them, but trust me, they helped us a lot, guiding us through this discussion and made us all sound a lot smarter than we really are. Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be back next week. Hopefully James will return. I will not, but I will be back soon, after a very frustrating trip back to Alabama with mostly no internet connection to speak of. I'll be playing a lot of DS.
No shortage of games.
All right, guys.
You'll be fine.
So, yeah,
you'll make it.
If you don't hear from me, if you don't hear from me until Christmas, which you probably won't, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, etc., etc. Whatever you wish to celebrate or not celebrate, I wish you a good one. And with that, I think we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Later.